Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Nun Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 4 lines from the top of Daf Nun Ches. We saw in our previous shiur the idea of an arusa having 12 months in which to get ready before the nisuin, before the consummation of her marriage, in order to get together her tachshitim and other related matters for the chuppah. After that time period, we saw then that the woman, the wife, is allowed to demand mizonos from her husband. And if you're dealing with a kohen husband, so the wife is entitled to truma. And we'll limit our comments right now to the what we call the Mishnah Rishona that said that during the Erusin period, even prior to the actual chuppah, she's entitled to truma. We also pointed out that a woman, by her very nature, biologically speaking, is tamea, is defiled almost a half a month every month during the female menstrual cycle, when you have to take into consideration the actual days of blood flow, plus the clean days that are necessary to observe before she can immerse and achieve tara. So there is a good amount of time per month when she cannot eat truma. So how is the kohen who's basic food supply is from truma tithes, how is he to support his wife during this time after the 12-month period lapses? So we saw a couple of deos in the Tanoim, and shortly in the as this Gemara continues, as our Omid Gemara continues, we're going to see quite a few. We'll see 5 deos Tanoim in one brisa that will be featured in the middle of this Omid. So now we turn to the Gemara. Rabbi Tarfon Omer Noisin Lo Hakol Truma, and Rabbi Kiva had said Omer Mechza Chulin Umechza Truma. According to Rabbi Tarfon, she's given just Truma. According to Rabbi Kiva, the fact that she is half a month ritually unclean, so during which time she cannot eat truma, he takes that into consideration and says the kohen will give her half chulin and half truma. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to notice the use of a geometric form, a house marking. On the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei Mivne heading, you see a little house featured. Abaye is in the house. Shnei Memros Shel Abaye. We'll have 2 comments made by Abaye limiting the machlokas. Under what circumstances does this machlokas, Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva, appear? And we'll also see, as the Omid Gemara unfolds, Deois Noisofois Shel Tanoim, additional Tanaic opinions, Binyan Man Noisel Ishish Nisarsel Lekain Vigiazman. How are we to feed her in terms of Truma Hulin, a woman who married a Kohen, and the time has arrived, and they're still delaying in the actual chuppah? The Gemara. Omar Abaye, Machlokes Bevas Kohen Lekohen. The Machlokes Rabbi Tarfon, who said Hakol Truma, and Rabbi Kiva said Mechza Chulin Mechza Truma. This is in a case where you have a daughter of a Kohen marrying a Kohen. Avol Bevas Yisrael Lekohen. If you're dealing with a Bas Yisrael, whose family is not a Kohen family, she is not used to the laws and the restrictions of Truma, and she's marrying now a Kohen. Divrei HaKol means everyone, including Rabbi Tarfon, agrees Mechsa Chulin uMechsa Truma. The Omar Abaye, Machlokis Barusa, the Machlokis Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva, where Rabbi Tarfon says she gets all Truma, that's when you're dealing with an Arusa. Avol Benesua, Divrei HaKol, Mechsa Chulin uMechsa Truma. So Rabbi Tarfon then is very limited. First of all, to talk about HaKol Truma, you have to be talking about Bas Kohen the Kohen. And even when you're talking about Bas Kohen the Kohen, we have to be talking about the Arusa. And Rashi points that out. Across from here, Rashi says, Arusa u Bas Kohen, dehoyel v'hi beveis avia, since she's in her family's house, and she's in her Kohen family house, her father's a Kohen, Torah aviha limkor truma bechulin limei tuma lefi shehu rogil bekach. Her father will sell the truma that the husband provided. He'll sell it and buy chulin for her yemei tuma, for her tomei days. Being that he, the father, the kohen, is a regular, he's used to doing this. So Rabbi Tarfon's halacha of she receives only truma is appropriate only for the arusa. Avol nesua, now here you have a major piece of information that's missing from the Gemara text itself. So, and Rashi fills it in. So we look at Rashi. Avol benesua shenoisein lo baila mezonis bevesa, a nesua, that means a woman who's consummated her marriage, who is receiving food from her husband, kagon mashre ishtoy de sholish. This is a case where the husband has, let's say, he's separated himself or left the wife. Now, we're not talking about a divorce, but he's put her, say, under the charge of a executor, a supervisor. He's called a sholish. Disnan Masnisen, is it's taught later in the Mishnah. So if you have a situation like that, a Nesua, so Divrei HaKol Mechsa Chulin uMechsa Truma, the Gemara says. She's not in her family's house anymore. We have to make that clear. In other words, she's not living by her father. And what would you expect? The Sholish is someone that will oversee her funding or her receipt of food, but he is not going to go selling off truma for her benefit. The only one available to do that is the woman herself. And with regard to that, so Rashi says mechzachulin lefishikol kavoyde basmelech penima. The honor of a woman is to be private, not to be a public figure. Wandering from place to place in attempting to sell off the truma. Her father, her brothers are not around her to take care of her needs. So that in a case of a nesua who's been put under the charge of a sholish, so Divrei, the Gemara says, as we read already, that even Rabbi Tarfon, every Divrei HaKol, Mechsa Chulin Mechsa Truma. During her Tomei months, what do you expect? What else can you expect of her? So you have to provide her with Chulin. Tanya Nami Hochi. We have a Braisa in which we'll see the points that Abaye made are supported. Rabbi Tarfon Omer Nosnin Lo Hakol Truma. Rabbi Akiva Omer Mechza Chulin Umechza Truma. Bamed Vomamurim. Under what circumstances is this Machlokes? Bevas Kohen L'Kohen. When it's a daughter of a Kohen marrying a Kohen, Afol Bas Yisrael L'Kohen, Divrei HaKol, everyone will agree, Mechza Chulin Umechza Truma. Just like Abaye said, everyone, including Rabbi Tarfon, will agree, it's half chulin and half truma that the kohen will supply her. Bamed vamurim barusa. Avobinesua, Tibrako, Mechsa Hulin, Umechsa Truma. Again, the second point that Abaye had made. So up till now, we've seen the opinions of Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yudah ben Beseira Omer, Nosin lo shte yodas shel Truma viachas shel Hulin. It means 2/3 out of 3/3, 2/3 Truma, 1/3 Hulin. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, this is a fourth sheet. The Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no saint law, hakol truma. Vehi mocheres velokachas bedomim chulin. This expression of no saint law, hakol truma, is reminiscent of Rabbi Tarfon above. There is a difference between them. We take a look at the Rashi, who he spells out the difference between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Yehuda. But in Rabbi Yehuda's comment, he says she's given all her food is truma. She sells it and buys in exchange for the money that she gets. She buys chulin food. So Rashi across from here, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Noisnein lo hakoil truma, bein Rabbi Yehuda le Rabbi Tarfon ika. There is a difference between them. The Rabbi Tarfon savar noisnein lo truma kidei mizonosel. So far, what Rashi has explained within Rabbi Tarfon is that, let's just say for argument's sake, that a woman eats 10 kilo of food per month. And the woman is going to receive hakol truma. She's going to have to sell off part of her truma and buy with that chulin. But the truma that she's going to sell off, let's say for every 2 kilo of truma, and the money that she gets for it is a market rate, a market value that's less than the equivalent amount in chulin. So if for every 2 kilo of truma, she's going to be able to buy 1 kilo of chulin. So that if she needs, let us say, 10 kilo of food per month, and she's going to have to sell off 5 kilo of truma because half the month she can't eat it, she's only going to be getting 2.5 kilo of chulin. So the sum total of food she'll have available is really 7.5 kilo of food when she needs 10. But as far as Rabbi Tarfon is concerned, that's the way it is. She's provided with truma, which corresponds to the amount that the objective amount of food she would eat per month. Now, we pointed out, we said it, Rashi says this here, that the amount that she's going to get for the truma is less than the amount than she would get if it were chulin. Because chulin, everyone wants. There's a greater demand for it, so hence its price is higher. Ula Rebbe Yehuda, according to Rebbe, Rashi goes on, Noisnin lo truma, Kishiur sheim bosa likach mechzechulin lo tivchois min demei machzis chulin. In our example, we said the woman needs 10 kilo of food per month, but she's going to be losing on every 2 kilo of truma. She's only going to get 1 kilo of of chulin. So there's a So as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, the husband will have to provide her with an extra 2.5 kilo of truma, so that she'll get the necessary amount. Sum told, when she sells it all, she'll have at the end of the day her 10 kilo of truma. Of food, so that in the sum total of things, she'll have As we said before, she'll have enough truma to sell that she'll get for the lower price of truma that she'll be getting, she'll have enough to buy the more expensive chulin. So that if we just go back to our example and correct ourselves just a bit for accuracy purposes, according to this, she would need to have 15 kilo of truma, because 5 kilo of truma, that will cover her for half the month. The 10 kilo of truma she'll sell off and get 5 kilo of chulin for that, because for every 2 kilo of truma, we said she would be getting 1 kilo of chulin, which is basically a 2 to 1 ratio. So that is Rabbi Huda's approach. But Rashi adds, Aval Torach Mechira Muto Le Limkor Lesito Tachas Chulin. She'll have to trouble herself, though, put herself out to sell that truma. And that's the way we describe things. That's the going truma rate. That information is important as we go on in the source. The source goes on with a fifth opinion. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, Kol Mokoyim Shehuskura Truma, wherever we say that a woman is going to receive truma, noisnim lo kiflayim bechulin. We look at Rashi, noisnim lo truma kiflayim bechulin, kosovar, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion, lo matruchinin lo lemochra b'shavya, we don't trouble the woman to sell the truma at its truma market rate, ela noisein lo truma harbei, as far as Reb Shimon Gamliel is concerned, we don't want the woman to have to trouble herself to fetch the going rate of truma, but rather we give her so much truma that she could sell the truma at a great discount. In other words, sell it off easily because she's selling it so cheap, below market value, and with that money she'll be able to purchase the necessary amount of chulin for her needs. The Gemara goes on, my binayu, what's the difference between Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon ben Gamliel? We already spelled this out, but the Gemara says, iko binayu tircha. The difference is our expectation of the woman to trouble herself to sell off the truma at market value, which involves a certain amount of troubling herself, versus Reb Shimon Leo, who says no, we'll expect her to receive so much truma that she could sell it very easily, because she'll be able to sell it at below market rate because she has so much of it, and with the money buy chulin. Hayovam eino machil betruma. We pointed out that if the orus dies during the 12-month period, and then she goes over to a waiting for the yavam mode, that's a shomeris yavam, the yavam is not going to end up feeding her the truma. My taima, why is it that the yavam, as opposed to the husband, in the case of a kohen where the 12-month period, waiting period lapsed, the kohen husband would then feed her truma. But in the case that the husband died during the waiting period, and she now is waiting for the yavam at the end of the 12 months is not going to be feeding her truma. What's the reason for that? The pasuk says, "Kinyan kaspo." This is the pasuk that we cited in our previous year, from which we learned that whom a kohen bonds with, he acquires, like an eved or an isha, he feeds her truma. Kinyan kaspoi omar rachmona v'hai the yavama kinyan de ochivu. It means your own acquisition is entitled to eat from truma, but not one who your brother had acquired. We use the term acquired, that means to establish the the legal marital relationship. In the case of the Yavam Yavama, it wasn't Kinyan Kaspo, his Kinyan, it was his brother's Kinyan. And that doesn't come under the rites of truma eating as accounted for by the Torah. Osta Shisha Chadoshim Bifnei Habal. The Gemara questioned some of the statistics that the Mishnah had given. Hashta Bifnei Habal Amris Lo. The Mishnah tells us that if she experienced 11 months and 28 days with her husband, waiting for the chuppah, and on the very last day of the 12-month period, he died. And we say, well, since at the end of the 12-month period, the husband is not there, therefore she does not get truma. Bifnei hayavam mibaya, where the Mishnah said that if she spent only one day with the husband and all the rest of the months waiting for a Yavam, do I need to be told there that she is not going to get the Truma at the passage of the 12 months? It's so obvious. If the bulk of the time was waiting for the husband who has the power to enable her to eat Truma, and still she doesn't get, when all of the time except for the first day was with the Yavam, certainly she's not going to get the Truma. So the Gemara says, you're right. Zu v'ein sorach lomar zu kotani. The Mishnah is in this format, is telling us that if all the days were in front of the husband, except for the last day she doesn't get, and that having been said, I don't have to tell you a case where she was only one day with the husband and the balance of the time with the Yavam. There, see, she certainly is not going to get. That's an acceptable Mishnah structure, even though, as we said, the second point stated here is anticlimactic, is seemingly superfluous. That nevertheless it can be found in Mishnayos. Zu Mishnah Rishayna. Our Mishnah presented we'll call it the first approach, and then the Mishnah reported, Bezin Shalachreim Omru, Ein Ho'isha Echeles Betruma, Ad Shetikones L'chupa. The later courts ruled that a woman does not eat from Truma until she actually enters Nisuin, which might be more than 12 months have gone by, 13 months, 14 months. There's a delay in their Nisuin. Doesn't matter. She's not going to get the Truma. My taima, why not? Omar Ula Vitema Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda Mishum Simpon. You have either Ula said this or Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda explained that the rationale behind the Bezin Shachram, the latter ruling, was because of Simpon. Simpon is a term that we're familiar with from our previous shiur, that the husband will discover a mum, a blemish on her body that would be something unacceptable to him, and he'll say, oh, this is all one big mistake, and thereby undo the original marriage. The original kiddushin will be voided. We just mentioned that this is a term we had in our previous year. So now this gives rise to the Gemara. If we spoke about Simpon already with regard to the first ruling, the Mishnah Rishona, what is it doing here in the ruling of the Beis and Shachram, the latter ruling? So Bishlama Le'ula, the idea of Simpon being introduced now works out well according to Ula who had explained the Mishnah Rishona, the first ruling. Kamaisa was Shema Yimzigula Kais Beveh Savia. The first stage of the Truma Arusa consumption was explained. Ula explained in the Mishnah Rishona that the fear was, why does an Arusa who, though min haTorah, midoraisa, is entitled to Truma, why does she not get the Truma? Because she's still living in her father's house, and you're dealing with a woman who's a Bas Yisrael marrying a Kohen, her family are not Kohanim, she might, after receiving the truma, share her truma with her family members, with her father, with her brother. And we pointed out that after the 12-month period lapses, the Kohen husband then sets aside a place outside of her house for her to receive the food, at which point the fear of her giving, of sharing the food with her family, falls away. So that was the rationale to explain the first stage of things, what we call the Mishnah Rishona, the first level. Ubas Raisa, when as time went on, Bas Raisa means the latter ruling, the Beis and Shachrayim, the Mishnah Chrona, they made a Gzeira Mishum Simpo. And even though the reason of Shemo Yimzigu Lo Kais Beis Aviyah no longer exists, there still is a problem of the husband not having had intimacy with her all of this time. We're talking about the pre-Nisuin stage. He might eventually discover a blemish, and retroactively, she was never, then when he calls off, when he voids the whole deal, he voids their whole marital bond, so we would not now want to have her being eaten truma at any point, because she retroactively had no right to eat truma once everything is called off. So this explanation of the Bezen Shel Achrayim being based on Simpon works out well according to Ula, who had explained the Mishnah Rishona as based on Shema Yimzigu Lo Kais Beveis Aviyah. So that even though that reason doesn't exist anymore, because after the 12 months the husband is Miyachid L'Mokim, nevertheless Simpon remains a problem. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Ela l'Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, but according to his explanation of the Mishnah Rishona, Komaiso Mishum Simpon, Ubasraiso Mishum Simpon, my binayu. Once you explained the Mishnah, the original ruling being Simpon related, then what difference is there between the Mishnah Rishona and the Mishnah Achrona? Rashi on the third line from the top says, "May be now kloma ma ro'u rishonim lahatira megia zman ve'elech." According to the Mishnah Rishona, which we said during the Erusin period, the basic Erusin period, the basic 12 months, we don't want her eating truma because of Simpon, the blemish discovery. However, after the 12 months went by, she can start eating truma. For some reason, we weren't any longer worried about the Simpon. And now, according to the Mishnah Achrona, even after the 12 months, we are worried about the Simpon. What happened? Why in the first stage were they not worried about it after the 12 months? And in the second stage, they are worried about it after the 12 months, so much so that they said no truma eating until she actually enters the chuppah. The Gemara answers, Iko binayu bedikas chutz. The point of difference between the Mishnah Rishona, the first stage of the Bezdin's ruling, and the second stage, the latter stage, is how much do we rely on bedikas chutz. Bedikas chutz means the relatives. This we spoke about in our previous shiur, that when the chuppah time arrives, so he has her bodily checked out through his female relatives and goes on their word. More so far, the Mishnah Rishona felt, bedikas chutz shmo bedika, that the investigation or the checking out that his female relatives do is something that he could rely on. And that if they tell her that she's blemish-free, to his liking, then there's no more fear of his of any voiding of the wedding, of any voiding of their marriage. Umar Sovar, the Mishnah Achrona, the Bezen Shachrayim, felt Bedikas Chutz Lo Shmo Bedika, that even though his female relative said, oh, she's blemish free, she's beautiful or whatever, nevertheless, that's not the same as his actual experiencing it himself. And therefore, according to the Mishnah Chrona, until they're actually together, she is not to receive truma. Until the point he can say, oh, she meets my requirements, she fulfills my standards or of physical acceptance, until that point, and that point's achieved only after the actual nisuin, the actual chuppah and intimacy that's associated with that. And up till that point, we don't take a chance by giving her any truma. Now we have a new Mishnah. On the side, we have a Nosei Klali, a general topic heading. And we entitle this Sugya Hamakdish Maisi Yedei Ishto. Makdish means sanctifies. One who sanctifies the profits, the work production of his wife. The Mishnah. Hamakdish Maisa Yedei Ishto Hare Zu Oysa Vaycheles. If a man sanctified his wife's output, it's the Mishnah says she just continues working and consuming that. In simple terms, the sanctity does not take hold. When we speak about the sanctification of the wife's output, Rashi adds, based on the Gemara later on, the Mishnah later on, found on Daf Samach Talmud Beis, there it's spelled out what she is expected to produce. And there the Mishnah mentions a woman who spins wool, how much she's expected to produce on a fixed basis of time, and that's spelled out so that when we speak about the Maisi Adisha, there's a certain basic amount she's expected to produce. Hamosar. Mosar is the amount she produces above that basic amount, the extra. Mosar Maisi de Ishto. In this case, Rashi points out the husband was makdish the mosar, not the basic amount. We should look at the Rashi together, because he adds details that are important for the understanding of the Gemara later on. Rashi, a few lines down from here in the Rashi commentary, Hamosar hikdish es moiser maisiya de ishto, mahi oisela yoiser al haroi, sheposku chachomim. That he sanctified the amount beyond the basic amount that she is expected to produce. But he didn't sanctify the basic amount. The husband's rights to the extra amount, the above and beyond amount, is in exchange for the fact that the husband provides her with a mal kesef. A mal kesef, we can say, is a weekly allowance, a weekly cash allowance that is beyond the basic food sustenance that he provides for her. So that at this point, then there are more opinions on this that we'll see later, but at this point, our thinking is that the maisi adayim that a husband gets is in exchange for the mizonos that he provides for her, and the moiser maisi adayim that he gets is in exchange for the mal kesef that he provides for her on a weekly basis. That's the thinking right now. So hamosar, if a husband sanctifies the mosar, Rabbi Meir omer hektish, Rabbi Yochanan Sandler omer chulin. Rabbi Meir says the hektish takes hold, it becomes sanctified, and Rabbi Yochanan Sandler says it remains chulin. Of course, we haven't explained any reasoning behind the information in this Mishnah. That is the Gemara's job. On the side, because we have a new geometric form that appears the diamond, we have a topic heading, a Noisei Mivneh, on the side where you can see the diamond, and we've written Machloikis Rav Huna V'Reish Lakish B'Inyan Hayachas Shel Abal L'maisi yudeho isha. Yodel shel mi al hel yoyno. There's a machlokes. It doesn't, when you learn the Gemara, it doesn't appear as such, but there is a machlokes between Rav Huna and Reish Lakish as to the output of the wife. Who has the upper hand? Who is in control? Can the woman say, listen, can she say to her husband, listen, I know that my mice yodaim is in exchange for the mazonos that you provide. You keep your mazonos, and I'm going to keep my mice yodaim. Why would a woman do that? One can give different explanations, but for our purposes, just be aware of that as a rule. Certainly, one can easily imagine that if the wife has a very large income, way above and beyond the value of the food that she eats, or if you have a woman that is on a 24/7 diet regimen, whereby she eats very, very little. So the value of the food that she eats to her might be much less than the value of her output. So you can imagine there are reasons. There might be other reasons, social reasons, psychological reasons, or whatever, that a woman would want to say that. So can she say to her husband, you keep the mazonos, I'm keeping my maisi adayim? Or maybe she can't. She doesn't have that power. And Rav Huna takes the approach, quoting Rav, that a woman has the upper hand. Reish Lakish, who is presented halfway down the Gemara, at the beginning of the line, the Gemara says, "Upligo de Reish Lakish," which means that Rav Huna's approach is at odds with the approach taken by Reish Lakish. So now, after having mapped out the Gemara a little bit, we go to the text. Omar Rav Huna, Omar Rav. Rav Huna quotes Rav as saying, "Yecholo isha loymar labailo," a woman can say to her husband, "Eini mizonos v'eini oisa. I don't want the mizonos, the food that you provide for me, and I in exchange for my forfeiting the food, I am going to keep my maisi yadayim." Kosovar, Rav Huna is of the opinion. Rav Huna, quoting Rav, is of the opinion. Ki tokinu rabbonon, when the rabbonon set up their enactments. Mizoni ikur, umaisi yadayim mishum eva. The husband's obligation of providing mizonos is a core enactment. It's a basic enactment. It's the main enactment. The beginning of their involvement, the rabbinic involvement in this, is to make sure that the woman gets food. That's the main concern. They also realize that if it's like a one-way relationship where the husband is feeding, 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 and getting nothing in return, that could result in a domestic sense of strain, ava, ill feelings. So to compensate the husband for the mizonos, which he must provide his wife, there's a concession that he is granted, namely that he receives her output in return. V'chi omra, when the woman speaks up and says, "Eini nizonos v'eini oisa," rishus biyada, when she is willing to forego the main enactment, she says, "I don't want the food, and I want to keep my maisi yadayim," so she has the power to do that. Meisve, we raise an objection. Tiknu mizonos tachas maisi yadayim. The language here suggests that the mizonos was established in exchange for the maisi yadayim that he receives. And by stating things thusly, one gets the feeling that the main enactment was that the husband must receive her output. And in exchange for that, so he gives her something, he gives her the food. So that's counter to what we said before. Someone says, Amar, restate the Tanaic source as follows. Tiknu maisi yodeo, they established that the husband will receive the ma'isidayim tachas mezonos in exchange for the main takona, the original, the basic takona, the basic enactment that he must provide her with mezonos. Leimo mesele, can we say that the following, in fact, our Mishnah supports Rav Huna? Hamatish ma'isi de ishto hare hi oisev oicheles. Husband sanctifies the ma'isi dime of the wife, doesn't take hold, she produces, and she consumes. My lav benizonis. Are we not, in fact, referring to a case of a husband that has the means of supporting her and wants to support her? And even so, the Mishnah says that the Mais Yudayim are not in his domain to sanctify. They're not his to sanctify. You can't sanctify something that's not yours. So with this approach, demonstrating that the husband's attempt to maktish, to sanctify the ma'isi yadayim of his wife, doesn't get off the ground, would be a demonstration or a support to Rav Huna that the woman is really in full control of her ma'isi yadayim. And hence, it's hers and not his, and as we said, he cannot sanctify something that's not his. The Gemara says, lo, that's not the case in the Mishnah. B'she'eino nizones. She's not receiving any support from her husband. Well, if she's not receiving any support from her husband, she's not expected to go famished. So the Ma'isi Yadayim, under those circumstances, she keeps and buys her own food. But that doesn't demonstrate that she is the boss, that she's the owner of her Ma'isi Yadayim. It's only because of these extenuating circumstances. The Gemara asks a question, lasts a number of lines. If the Mishnah is talking about a case where she's not being supported by her husband, my lemeimra, what do I have to teach the Mishnah saying that he can't be maktish her Ma'isi Yadayim? It's obvious that he can't maktish it and that it's hers. Why is it so obvious? Afilu leman de Omar yochel rav loimar le'eved asei imi ve'eni zoncha. Even according to the opinion that says a master can tell his slave, I want you to work for me, I want your income to come to me, and I am not going to support you. Sounds like a rather harsh arrangement. Hani mili be'eved kanani. That is true when you're dealing with a heathen slave. The loksiv be imoch. The pasuk, when it describes a master-slave relationship, it doesn't use the word imoch when you're dealing with a master and an owner of a heathen slave. Avol eved ivri, a person who owns a Jewish servant, dichtiv be imoch lo. The word in the pasuk in Dvorim, perek tesvah, pasuk tezayin, says, we have this quoted on the side of the Gemara, Voya ki omar elecho lo eitze meimoch ki aevucha vesbeisecho ki tov lo imoch. Means that the Jewish servant is treated like the owner. Maybe we can say even better than the owner. That so the things have to be very good for a Jewish servant. And as a result, there's no way that an owner of a Jewish servant is allowed to tell him, listen, you're going to work for me and I'm not going to support you. You can't say that to a servant, a Jewish servant. V'kolshekein ishto. And certainly you wouldn't be able to say that to your wife, that you're going to work for me, I'm going to keep your ma'isi yadayim and I'm not going to support you. If the husband is not supporting her, so she keeps her ma'isi yadayim. That's obvious. And if she's keeping the ma'isi yadayim, of course he can't be maktishit. So why do I have to teach a Mishnah under those circumstances? The Gemara goes on to say, well, those are the circumstances, and it's true. The Reisha of the Mishnah is superfluous. It doesn't really have to be taught. Seifa, it's the Rikhle. The Mishnah taught the beginning as a lead-up to the Seifa, to the continuation, to the end of the Mishnah. And here the Gemara quotes the end of the Mishnah. Mosar, where a husband sanctifies the extra amount, Rabbi Meir Omer Hekdish, and Rabbi Yochanan Sandler Omer Chulin. So that, we wanted to, lead up to the Machlokas, to tell us this Machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, which is a reference to the Mosar Maisya Dayim, and even though she's not being supported, as we said, the Moser Maisya Dayim can in fact become sanctified, and we'll have to wait later to understand how that could be. That's something dealt with later in the Gemara. But for our purposes, we don't have a support to Rav Huna from the case of Makdish Maisya Deishto, that the Hekdish doesn't take hold. Nevertheless, Rav Huna said what he did, that a woman is she's the boss, she's in control of her Maisya Dayim, and she can tell her husband, Eini Nizaynis Veini Oisa. Upligo de Reish Lakish. Rav Huna's approach is different than that of Reish Lakish. It conflicts with Reish Lakish. The Omar Reish Lakish, Lo Tema Taima de Rabbi Meir. Don't say that Rabbi Meir, who spoke about the Hekdish as being Chal, we saw in the case of Mosar, where a husband sanctifies the Mosar, Rabbi Meir says the Hekdish, the sanctification takes hold. Don't say Mishum Tekosovar, that the reason for that is that Odom Makdish Dovar Shelo Bali Olam. The reason for the Hekdish taking hold is because a person can sanctify even things that haven't come into being yet. Sanctify something now that will take hold only on an item that hasn't come to be yet. And the time of Rabbi Meir, the reason behind Rabbi Meir is as follows. Mitoch Sheyachol Lechufa Lemaisi Yodeha. And here we've dashed underlined this expression. This shows us Reish Lakish's approach to Maisi Yadayim. Since a husband can force his wife to produce Maisi Yadayim, that shows us that the husband has the upper hand. Nase ka'oimer lo, the sanctification that we see here, it's as if he's saying to her, Yikachu yodayich lo'osehem. I'm sanctifying your hands with regard to their output. As far as the ratio is concerned, we already established that she was, the reason there the Hekdish didn't take place is because he wasn't supporting her. So where you're not supporting her, so okay, she has to her Maisya Dayim, she needs that in order to buy her food. But outside of that, let's say everything that's above and beyond, that the husband can sanctify. And through what mechanism? Is it not so that something that hasn't come into being, a person can't sanctify? We said, don't try to explain Rabbi Meir as if a person can sanctify something that hasn't come to be yet. No, a person can't do that. But what is the husband doing? Since the husband has full control over the output, he is able to say, I'm sanctifying your hands, and her hands are something that are in this world. They have come to be. She lives with her hands. So he's sanctifying her hands with regard to their output. The Gemara asks, "Vaha lo Omar lo hachi," but the husband didn't say. He didn't say, "I makdish your hands with regard to their output." He said, "I makdish your maisi adayim. I makdish the output." The Gemara explains. Kevon de Shaminon Lei le Rabbi Meir de Omar Ein Adam Motzi Dvorav Levatola. Rabbi Meir has been heard to say in Maseches Erechin, and we're not going to give the background for that. Rashi gets involved with that a little bit, but according to Rabbi Meir, when a person sanctifies things, he doesn't say something for nothing. That's Ein Odo Motzi Dvoro Vavatola. And since a person can't sanctify something that hasn't come into the world yet, if he says, I makdish your maisi adayim, it's nase ke'oimer lo yikachu yodayech leoseim. It's as if he spelled out the correct language. Once again, because a person wouldn't say something for nothing, and if you left his words as they are, it would be meaningless, because he's saying, he's being makdish her output that hasn't come into the world yet. Therefore, we have to understand what he's saying as, I'm sanctifying your hands with regard to their production. The Gemara asks, presents a question, it lasts a number of lines. The Sova Rabbi Meir Ein Odo Makdish Dover Shalobo Liolam. Does Rabbi Meir himself really hold that a person can't sanctify something that hasn't come to be yet? V'atanya, ha'oimer li'isha, a man says to a woman, and here we have several lines of what a man might say to a woman. Hare'at mekudeshes li l'achar she'ez gayer, l'achar she'ez gayri. I am marrying you, and it should take hold after I convert. Right now, he's a Gentile, and of course, there's no marital bond between a Jew and a Gentile. That just doesn't exist. But he's proclaiming, I'm giving you this money and accept it on condition that you will be considered married to me after I convert. Or he says this to a Gentile woman. He says, after you convert. Or lachar she'esh tachrer, or if he's a slave, he's a Jewish servant, and he says, he's a heathen servant, he says, I want you to take this money from me and be my wife after I am set free. And when a heathen servant is set free, he becomes Jewish. Or li'achar she'tish tachrer, speaking to a heathen bondmaid, saying thusly. Lachar she'yomus balech, or a man gives money to a married woman, and says, I want you to be married to me after your husband dies. So, shetomus achosech, or a man is married to a particular woman's sister. Man can't be married to two sisters. So he says, take this money from me, be married to me when my wife, i.e. your sister, dies. Oh, la'achar shiachlotz lech yivmech. Or, you have a woman that's shemeres yavam, she's waiting for a yavam to marry her, or to participate in chalitza, thereby releasing the yavama to marry anyone. So you have this outsider coming to her saying, take this money with the understanding that you will be married to me after the yavam sets you free through chalitza. Rabbi Meir Omer Mikudeshes, Rabbi Meir says, it takes hold. So here you have a case of someone making a deal, say a type of transaction, concerning something that hasn't come to be yet. So Rabbi Meir holds that a person does have control over things that haven't come to be yet. So the Gemara says, Me'ai in. Yes, from this source that we just read, you can see that. Meho leko lemashma mino. But from the case of Makdish Maisi Odayim, there you can't see. Namely, though Rabbi Meir said that the Moser Maisi Odayim becomes Kadosh, that doesn't reflect the idea that a person is Makdish Adover Shol Abolam, as we explained earlier, because that can be understood as a case of someone intending to say Yikachi Yodayech Lo Sehem, that he's sanctifying her hands, which are around, with regard to their output. Hamosar, Rabbi Meir Omer Hegdish. Here we're going to focus now on that section, the latter section of the Mishnah dealing with the Mosar. Before we go on in the Gemara, we look at the side. We have a Nosei topic heading, in which we see Machlokas Rav Ushmuel Mul Rav Ada, Rav and Shmuel together versus Rav Ada. Beshitas Rabbi Meir Mosai Chal HaHegdish Al Moser Maisi Yedei Ishto. Rabbi Meir indicated that the Mosar Maisi Yadayim, the amount that's beyond the prescribed output that a woman is expected to produce, that amount beyond the basic quantity, if a husband sanctifies it, so the sanctification takes hold. When does that become sanctified? So now the Gemara. Eimas Kadosh. Rav Shmuel de'Amri Trevayu Mosar li'achar Misa Kadosh. The Mosar becomes sanctified after his wife dies and he inherits her. Rabbi Ado bar Avo Amar Mosar Mechayim Kadosh. As soon as it's produced, it becomes sanctified as a result of the husband's declaration of sanctity. Havi ba rapapa. The word havi means he questioned. Rapapa questions. What bimai? What are the circumstances here? And we have triangles, and on the side under the mivne heading, we call these shlavim levara bimai medubar. These are stages to clarify under what are we talking about. Imabal male lo mizonos, is the husband providing her with basic food? Ma'al kesef, is he providing her with that weekly allowance that we referred to before in Rashi? The Gemara. I lema b'male lo mizonos u'ma lo ma'al kesef l'tzorcheha. If you're talking about a husband that is supporting her with the basic food sustenance, plus he's giving her the weekly allowance, my time of demand omar lachar miso kodosh. Why would it be that the sanctity sets in only after she dies? Why would Rav and Shmuel say what they do? Why isn't it sanctified immediately? After all, we explained before that the things that a husband provides are in exchange for the output of his wife. You have the basic maisi yadayim, and then you have the moser maisi yadayim, and those things are in exchange for the fact that the husband is providing her with mizonos, and he's providing with the mal kesef. If he's providing her with everything, so he's getting everything. Why then should the sanctity of the mosar kick in only after she dies, and the husband inherits it? Viela. Do you want to say that the Mishnah, in other words, that the opinions of Rav and Shmuel apply to a case when he's not providing her with any sustenance and he's not giving her a weekly allowance? Well, if that's the case, my time of demand omar mechayim kodosh, then why would Rav Ado bar Avo say that that the sanctification is effective while she's still alive? If he's not providing her with anything, so she should be able to keep everything she produces. And if she keeps it, it's hers, not his to sanctify. Why then would it become sanctified while she's still alive, indicating that it belongs to the husband? Li'oilom b'male lo mezoinos v'eino male lo mo'al kesef l'tzorcheha. We're dealing with a split situation. He's providing her with basic mizonos, and he's not providing her with the weekly ma'al kesef allowance. And now the question is, the two things that a husband provides his wife in this context, the mizonos and the ma'al kesef, what are they given to her for? What, or in exchange for what, are these things given to her? Once again, in exchange for what? Is he giving her mizonos? Is he giving her ma'al kesef? And here we're going to see a machlokes. And take note of the fact that we have a long answer marking. The double underline highlights the word tiknu. And it was what the rabbinic enactment was. Rav Shmuel, that says that the mosar becomes sanctified only after her death, indicating that while she's alive, she's in control of it, and we're talking about a case where she's not receiving that weekly allowance. So the Rav Shmuel hold tiknu mizonos tachas maisi yadayim. The basic maisi yadayim is something he receives in exchange for the mizonos. Umo kesef tachas mosar, and the mo kesef is given to the woman in exchange for the mosar. V'kevan delo koyoyiv lo ma kesef, and since as we set things up, he's not giving her the ma kesef, so moser dido havi, the moser remains hers. Therefore, there's nothing, there's no sanctification that will kick, that we can talk about until after she dies. So all that production that she produced during her lifetime above the basic required amount, it becomes sanctified after she dies and he inherits it. Rav Ado bar Ava Sovar, Rav Ado held that the Mosar becomes sanctified in her lifetime. He holds Tiknu Mizonos Tachas Mosar Umo Kesef Tachas Mais Yodeo. The enactment was that the that in exchange for the Mizonos that he gives her, he, the husband, receives the Mosar. And our discussion is focused on the sanctification of the Mosar. Is she getting Mizonos? Yes. And as the Gemara explains, let's just keep reading. Umo Kesef Tachas Mais Yodeo V'keva D'Kiyoyev Lo Mizoni. Since the husband is providing her with Mizonos, Mosar, which is in exchange for the Mizonos, according to Rav Ado, Didei Havei, it belongs to the husband. And hence, he is in control of it, and hence he can sanctify it. But my komiflugi, what's the underlying, the root of this controversy? More sovar Rav and Shmuel hold, midi deshchiach, mi midi deshchiach. The exchange is between items that are common. In other words, Mizonos is a daily need that the woman has, and she receives that in exchange for Mais Yodeim. Basic work output is common amongst women. They produce the basic amount. Umor Sovar, Midi Dekayetz, Mi Midi Dekayetz. Rav Ado bar Ava figures that we set up a relationship between things that have a fixed amount, a fixed quantity. So the Mais Yodeim, as we mentioned earlier, is that there's a fixed amount of output that a woman is expecting, minimum fixed amount that a woman is expected to produce. And so that the Mais Yodeim is something that she will give to the husband in exchange for something else that's fixed, namely Mo'o Kesef. Mo'o is a type of coin, an amount of money, a fixed amount of money that she is expected to receive on a weekly basis. So we have this relationship between that which is fixed in exchange for that which is fixed. Meisvei, you'll notice we have triangles that appear in different directions. On the side of the Gemara, the Mivneh heading, we have with the triangle point facing up, it's Delo Kiravado. It's like not the approach of Ravado, and the inverted triangle is Litovas Ravado, like Ravado. So we have a source that says the Tiknu Mizonos Tachas Mais Yodeo. Now, what did Rav Ado say about Mizonos? Rav Ado had said, you can see this by using your markings very quickly. You see the fourth line from the top, there's Tiknu, and we dash in a Mizonos for Mosar. This source says Mizonos is in exchange for the Mais Yodeim. That's not like Rav Ado. Amo, so to answer that, restate it, re-understand it as the established Mizonos Tachas Mosar Mais Yodeo. The expression Mais Yodeo is to be understood as Mosar Mais Yodeo. That's what Rav Ado said. Toshma, notice here you have an inverted triangle. We're going to bring a source that will be like Rav Ado. It says as follows: Im eino nosei lo mo kesef litzorchel maise yodeo shelo. If a husband does not give her the mo kesef, it's a fixed amount, then the maise yodeo, which is a fixed amount, she keeps that. Well, that's just like Rav Ado. Someone says no, eimo mosar maise yodeo shelo. That, namely, if he doesn't give his wife the daily mo kesef allowance, then she keeps the mosar. That's not like Rav Ado. However, v'ho alo katoni, but did we not learn concerning that? Mahi oiseloi, what does she provide for him? Mishkal chomesh sloim shti biuda. The chomesh sloim is a weight. Mishkal means the weight of five sela. of shti is the thin string or thread that's put on a loom when you're weaving garments. That amount of spun wool in Yehuda. Yehuda's a region. This amount is an amount of the Maisi Yodayim itself. So that how can you say that prior to that it says Maisa, that Mosar Maisi Yodayim is hers, and what is the amount? It's this 5 sela shti in Yehuda. But that's an amount for the basic Maisi Yodayim, not for the Mosar Maisi Yodayim. Mosar is simply a general amount, any amount, an undefined amount above the basic amount. But it's in terms of the actual Tanaic source, it's on the heels of there's this comment amount giving you the amount. It must be following on the heels of not the Mosar Maisim, but the Maisim Daim itself. So the Gemara says, responds, Hochi Ko'omar. We can understand the Tanaic source as follows. And with the triangles, we see how we're navigating. And here we're going to have the understanding of that, of the source, and it's not going to be for Rav Ada's benefit. Maisa Yodaya Kamohavi, the Leda Mosar Yodaya Kamo, the basic output of a woman is how much, in order to then be able to discover what would be the Mosar. If I know what the basic amount is, I can then say anything above that is the Mosar. So the basic amount is how much in order for me to know what then becomes Mosar. Mishkal Chomesh Sloyim Shti B'Yehuda Shein Eser Sloyim B'Goliel. So that I can keep the source in the non Rav Ada mode, where it said Mosar Maisa Yodea Shela, and have the continuation of that source speak about the Mishkal Chomesh Sloyim. And then I go back to the Toshma source, which we thought was for the benefit of Rav Ada, and we understand it as not so. And that Toshma source, it said, "Im eino no same law, mo kesef litzorcheha." Then the hemshif of Ma'is Yodea Shela really means Mosar Ma'is Yodea Shela. If he doesn't give her the mo kesef, then the Mosar belongs to her. And as far as the fact that it goes on to talk about the Mishkal Chomesh Shloim is not a repudiation, or I say a refutation of us talking about the Mosar, because I have to know the basic amount of output in order to determine what the Mosar would be. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.